Hello and welcome to this week's episode of On the Box. We're very small this week, aren't we, Rob?
Speak for yourself. I'll have you know I am not small.
Gets very lonely without another person.
What are you trying to say? I'm worried where this is going. It's supposed to be a show about TV. What are you suggesting, Andy? We don't have that kind of relationship. Anyway, yes, welcome to On the Box here on the Geek Show Podcast Network. Let's get the important bit out the way first, right? The Geek Show is run by volunteers. We're all volunteers here. If you like what you're hearing, then you can listen to some of our other shows. We've got book shows like Literary Loitering. We've got movie shows like Cinema Eclectica. And if you like what we do, then you can show your support by making a donation or by buying one of our bits of lovely merchandise. All of the links are on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you're interested in being on a show or you'd like to write for us, then you can get in touch with us on the contacts page of our website or by emailing us studio@thegeekshow.co.uk or info@thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can contact us on Facebook or on Twitter or even on Google Plus. Yes, we do exist on Google Plus as well. And all of our shows are available on a variety of distribution sites, everything from iTunes to Mixcloud and soon's YouTubes as well. I don't know why I suddenly started speaking like that. And YouTube. Yeah, yes, YouTubes, the YouTubes. And yeah, do you know what it is? I think it's because I recently watched Dad's Army and then I watched Allo Allo. So I've got a little, I've gone a little bit into Gestapo mode because of hair flick.
YouTube sounds like a bootleg version of YouTube.
Sorry, did you say bootleg virgin? Does Richard Branson know this? So anyway, shall we get into this, Andy?
Yes.
Okay, so what are we starting off with?
Well, the Great British Bake Off.
Ooh. Is this the big news this week that we've all been hearing about?
This is the big news this week.
Okay.
With six bigs in there.
Yes, okay.
This is the news where Great British Bake Off has moved from its usual, comfortable, nice home of the BBC and has shifted gently down to Channel 4.
Did you just call the BBC nice?
I called the Great British Bake Off nice.
Okay, right. I was going to say the BBC are anything but nice.
But okay, this is Channel 4 now, so they usually they usually push the boat with more offensive humour, so I don't know how they're going to tackle this.
Well, yeah, but also, the interesting thing about this story, right, the production company that makes Great British Bake Off is called Love Productions, and they wanted, right, BBC have been in negotiations with them for a year already and raised the price for the show for a year to 15 million. Love Productions said, no, we want 25 million, which is four times what BBC are currently paying for The Great British Bake Off. Because remember, when it started, it was on BBC Two, and it was a niche show. No one ever thought it'd become the most popular show in the UK, right? And then we had last year, Nadia Hussain winning, with 15 million people watching. And all of a sudden, The Great British Bake Off is the big thing. And it's been building to that point for a while. But,
oh, definitely.
You know, when Love Productions wanted £25 million per year for the show, BBC went, look, we can't afford that because BBC are having to tighten their belts just like everyone else. Then Channel 4 came in and went, we'll do it. So they're moving to Channel 4. But the big question everyone's asking now is, did Channel 4 buy the Great British Bake Off or did it just buy a turkey called the Great British Bake Off?
It bought a name.
Yeah, it bought the name, but did it buy a turkey? Because Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry, right? The Great British Bake Off, when you talk about it, there are four people that make it work, right? Aside from the contestants, who most of them are lovely, by the way, but aside from them, there are four people who make it work. Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry as the judges, right? They're like, you know, the sage in the Kung Fu movie who sits on top of the mountain and, you know, teaches the young man how to do Kung Fu.
Yeah.
You know, they're like that. They're so high up the baking ladder that everyone just kind of bows down to them. You know, Paul Hollywood should be wearing orange robes and shaving his head and, you know, walking around with prayer beads. And Mary Berry should be treated like some, you know, some holy nun person of baking.
That might be the next plan BBC have.
Maybe, we don't know.
You could call it Nuns and Buns, couldn't you?
I suppose you could call it Nuns and Buns. I don't know where that come from, but anyway. So yeah, they're like the sages of baking. They're the masters of baking. They've been doing it for so many years, and everyone else is basically an apprentice in their eyes, right? But then you've got Mel and Sue, Mel Gedroyk and Sue Perkins. And I absolutely adore Mel and Sue, because when I talk about the Bake Off, right, one of the reasons I love watching the Bake Off is the antics of Mel and Sue, right? Because they're quirky and they're goofy, and when people are baking in the competition, they're like little kids, you know, poking their noses into what everyone's doing, going, what's that? Ooh, what's that? Ooh, what are you doing there? Ooh, what's that? Can I try a bit of that? Can I have that?
Yeah, but don't you think, though, it'll put them off? You know, it's like if you were on the Bake Off, Rob, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't want someone coming over and going, can I have a piece of that? I'd be so mad if it caused me to burn a cake or something.
But the thing is, I think they choose their moments. I think they're experienced enough to choose their moments when you're not going to be disturbed too much. And if they are disturbing you, you know, I've seen loads of contestants just say, look, can I just concentrate? And they go away. You know, they don't disturb them too much.
Wait until they pour something in a very hot pan and then go, hello.
Nah, it's because the tent is so open, you can see them coming, you know? And so if you see them coming, you just basically, right, and don't make eye contact and make myself look busy. But yeah, Mel and Sue really make the show what it is. And I think them more so than Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry. Because Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry are like the parents, you know, stern, you know, and slightly distant. And to use Marie Brennan's terms from A Natural History of Dragons, the memoirs of Lady Trent, how the character of Lady Trent describes her father, says he's like a pagan god, you know, stern, aloof, and slightly distant. And Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood are exactly like that. So they are effectively pagan gods. My God, the religious theme in Bake Off. How are we tying these two together? I don't know how my brain works sometimes, but anyway.
The thing is now, though, I don't know if you clicked on the last episode, and it's called The Great British Bake Off, right?
Yeah.
But last episode, they were making curry.
Oh, yeah, because the...
In a Yorkshire pudding. Yeah. So basically, it's just the Great British Cook-Off now, isn't it?
Well, not really, because we call it the Bake Off, but a lot of what they're doing... And see, I understand why it still works as the Great British Bake Off, even though they're making Yorkshire puddings. Well, Yorkshire puddings are made in the oven, right? But baking isn't just what's made in the oven, right? Because donuts are classed as a baked product, but you don't bake them. You fry them. So I think that defining it just because it's, you know, fried or it has curry as an additional thing, because the main thing was the Yorkshire puddings, right? Defining it because they made curry, I think, is a bad move. I think if it's something made predominantly with flour, then you could probably have it in the Great British Bake Off. Do you see what I mean?
True. True.
I think that's something that we can consider. But anyway, back to the news. The reason why everyone's starting to think that Channel 4 may have bought a turkey that just happens to be called the Great British Bake Off is because Mel and Sue have already announced that they're not going.
Ah.
Yeah, they've already announced that they're not going. And Mary Berry was asked by The Sun why the show was moving to Channel 4 after 6 years on the BBC. And she said, I have no idea. And then she said, anything that happens is nothing to do with my choice. Right? So I don't know whether she's staying or going. I don't know if Paul Hollywood will stay or go. But the thing is, Paul Hollywood has experience of doing stuff with other channels anyway, because he's done stuff with Food Network, right? He did like Paul Hollywood City Bakes or something like that, and that was on Food Network. And so I know he's got experience working with other networks, and it might be he might stay. I don't know, but I don't think the Great British Bake Off is going to work out for Channel 4. I think what'll happen is it'll be a Top Gear.
Be the Top Gear effect.
Yeah, I think what'll happen is it will go to Channel 4, and then people will watch it, the first episode, to see what it's like, but it won't have melon soup.
Hmm. Similar to Top Gear, the two that would replace Mel and Sue need to have that personality.
Yeah.
They need, and I'd really struggle with trying to find similar type of personalities there.
I mean, who could you choose, in all honesty, to replace Mel and Sue on the Great British Bake Off? Because Mel and Sue started off on TV as a pair, you know?
Mm.
Mel and Sue started off as a pair, and yes, they've done their own things by themselves, but generally, when you think of Mel and Sue, you think of them as a pair, don't you?
Yeah, so you need a pair, wouldn't you, to replace them?
Yeah, you couldn't just do it with one. You'd need a pair, and a pair who are, you know, combative, rambunctious, childish, goofy, that sort of thing.
Chuckle Brothers.
I don't think the Chuckle Brothers could work. I think the Chuckle Brothers are a bit too long in the tooth. Get it? Get it? Get it?
I think they're BBC anyway, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And the other two, Ant and Dec, are ITV, so they're gone out the window.
No, please not Ant and Dec. Do not let Ant and Dec do the Great British Bake Off.
It's going to be ITV, though, wouldn't it?
No, because then it'll be the Great British Bake Off in the jungle.
Although, I'd watch that if that was what BBC are planning to go against the Bake Off with. Just put it in the jungle.
This is the thing, right? BBC, what they really should have done, when they realised that the Bake Off was working, they should have basically bought the rights to the Bake Off from Love Productions and started producing it themselves, right? Mm. Put the money into production themselves. And they would have been sitting on a winner. But instead, they basically let Love Productions continue to run Bake Off, continue to produce it, instead of basically saying, right, we're going to do this ourselves, buy the rights to it in the early days of Bake Off. Say, you know, we'd like to buy the rights to this.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean?
Or when it was just that small BBC Two show.
Yeah, after the first year, right, here's the thing. And this is something that a lot of broadcasters don't do, and I'm shocked that they don't, because it's the first thing I'd do. If you have a show that's run for one season already, right, and the numbers for it are growing, because you can see the numbers, you can track the numbers. If the audience figures are growing, then buy the rights to that show so that you then own that show and then just basically assign funds to produce. Because it will be cheaper in the long run than letting somebody else produce the show. And you have more control over the show then as well. And I don't understand why BBC didn't do that. I think that it's an oversight on their part.
There's actually a list of, potential Channel 4 personalities or that could replace Mel and Sue.
Who?
Or potentially host the show even.
Okay, who have we got?
Mel and Sue's at the bottom.
Yeah.
In case they come over.
Sorry, say that again, in case they come over.
In case they come over.
Yeah.
From BBC.
Yeah.
Nadia Hussein, who won the last series.
I don't think she'll go. I think that Nadia's one of those people who's effectively, she has been given opportunities by BBC. I mean, she's doing this show right now, The Chronicles of Nadia, where she's going around Bangladesh, which is her home country.
It's a good title, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great title, and that's on BBC. So I don't think she'll go.
Jennifer Saunders is above that.
Jennifer Saunders?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she did the Great Sport Relief Bake Off.
Yeah, but the thing is, Jennifer Saunders is only going to work on the Great British Bake Off if you have Don French.
Mm.
It has
Joe Brand.
Joe Brand, I don't think she'll go. I'll be honest. I think Jo Brand, she loves Great British Bake Off. She loves the theatre of it. She loves the food, obviously. Who doesn't? I'm a fan of the food of Bake Off as well. And but she's lucky enough to get to eat some of it. So I'm jealous.
He's the good one.
He's the good one. Okay.
Yeah, it's not because of the person it is, but it's Jamie Oliver, right? But it's written as a typo, Jamie Olivier. So it must be his French cousin or something.
Jamie Oliver's French cousin. Okay.
And if it's not Jamie Olivier,
it's Jamie Oliver.
Number two, Jimmy Carr.
Well, no, not but Jimmy
that
Carr.
Seems to be what Channel 4 run to.
He's their go-to guy. But, okay, backtracking a little bit, Jamie Oliver, I like him. Right? I like Jamie Oliver, but I'm also sick of his face. Right? He spread himself a lot over food shows for several years, from a number of years now, ever since The Naked Chef, right? And so he's a well-known household name, but I'm just sick of his face. I'm sick of seeing him on TV because I see him on 15-minute meals and then I see him on this and then I see him on Jamie at Home and I see him on all sorts of other things and it's just constant Jamie Oliver, bang, bang, bang. And I'm just like, no, no, no more. Just look, Jamie, I appreciate all the things that you've done. I appreciate the Ministry of Food. I appreciate the hard work you've put in into improving school meals. I appreciate all of that.
Apart from getting rid of Take Your Twizzlers, but we let that one slide.
No, I'm fine with that. But just, you know, maybe just take a step back from TV. I mean, there was one time, right, on Food Network where the entire day was nothing but Jamie Oliver for an entire day.
I couldn't sit and watch that. I don't mind Jamie Oliver, but yeah, too much of him. Yeah.
That's my point. I like him. I think he's a great chef. I think he's a very good person. I think that he's got his priorities right, you know, eating healthy and teaching your kids to eat healthy and everything like that. I think he's got his head screwed on right. I'm just sick of his face. I can't put it any more politely than that. And Jimmy Carr, as you said, he's Channel 4's go-to guy. He's basically their Winston Wolfe.
He is Channel 4, basically.
No, he is their Winston Wolfe, isn't he? When you think about it. He's like, what's his name? Oh, I've forgotten. Who was it who played the character of Winston Wolfe in Pulp Fiction? Harvey Keitel. Know. Harvey Keitel. He's their Harvey Keitel, yeah. Right? Whenever Channel 4 bosses have a show and they need a host for it, they ring Jimmy Carr. They just go, call the car. We'll get the car to do it. He'll fix it for us.
The one at the top of the list, though,
yeah,
is Sue Perkins' partner, Anna Richardson.
Really?
Yeah, but I won't see that happening.
I can't see that happening either. It's Sue Perkins' partner, after all. And when you get right down to it, if Sue isn't doing it, I doubt Anna will.
Unless Sue goes, go and ruin that show for me.
No. Unless Sue basically says, Anna, let's be clear about this. If they offer you a big bag of cash to do it, then go and do it. Because times are hard and we need the money. I can't do it because I've got to show my loyalty to BBC. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. But make sure you get the big bag of cash first.
Yeah, because it won't be there for long.
Yeah, it won't be there for long. Just make sure you get the money first, right? Always get the money first, Anna.
Hey.
I think it is a Top Gear moment for them. But we've talked enough about the bake-off. Yeah. And the Top Gear moment actually leads us into something interesting because there is a rumour going around. There's a rumour going around that Paul Hollywood has been tipped to take over from Chris Evans on Top Gear.
Ooh, I thought you were going to say Jeremy Clarkson was coming to the Bake Off there.
No. But the thing is, Paul Hollywood likes his cars and he likes racing, right? And Paul's hinted that he might stay with Great British Bake Off. Because he doesn't work for the BBC and he's employed by Love Productions themselves, right? But he's also a petrol head. And if BBC offered him the position on Top Gear and said, don't go at the Bake Off, now there's an interesting dilemma.
Which one would you take? You'd think he'd probably go at the Bake Off, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Mm. He knows his baking, right? But he's also a petrol head. So the chance to do Top Gear, which is the premier car show on TV in the world. I mean, he's an amateur sports car racer in his spare time. He's got a small fleet of motors, including motorbikes, and he's competed in Le Mans, the 24-hour, right? And he's also did a one-off show called License to Thrill, which is all about Aston Martins. So, yeah, There's no concrete plans to replace Chris Evans yet, because Chris Evans and Matt LeBlanc just don't get on.
And Chris Evans has quit.
Yeah, he's quit, and that's the thing. Matt LeBlanc has actually said to BBC, get rid of him or I go. So Paul Hollywood might be an interesting choice because he could win over Matt LeBlanc with cake. Think about it. We know Joey likes his food.
I take it, though, you could always get the crew from The Last Leg doing the bake-off.
I don't think so. I don't think you could get the crew from The Last Leg doing the bake-off, and for one good reason, right? The Great British Bake Off has to be kind of genteel, you know? It has to be this laid-back, very, very British thing, and the crew of The Last Leg will not make it genteel. I've watched The Last Leg. They so will not make it genteel.
Be a good Top Gear, though.
No, but there will be cookies in the shape of penises.
To be a special late night edition of the Bake Off.
It will be like Cake Boss all over again. You know the Cake Boss that Ryan watches? It will be like that. There's a penis cake in the fridge. Yeah. But anyway, that leads us on to Amazon.
Yes, that wondering. We're on about the website and the servers, not the forest or whatever it is.
Yes, the place with lots of things that will kill you. From there, we're going to the place with lots of things that will kill you.
Yeah, this is the competition to Top Gear. Amazon Prime's own The Grand Tour.
Yep.
Has its release date for November 18.
Interesting.
And it's got one of the biggest budgets for a show ever.
Really?
About £4.5 million a show.
Holy.
Budget a show.
Wow. That's a lot of money. And wow. I don't know what to say to that. Is that pounds or dollars?
That's pounds, that one.
Wow. I honestly don't know what to say to that. That's
The first episode, this is, the synopsis for the first episode is, what the premise is for the show, each show is in a different location, and they have a giant traveling tent, which is the show studio every week.
Yeah.
And the first episode is in California.
All right, so they're moving around.
Yeah. Hence the Grand Tour. It makes sense now.
Yeah.
The first episode compares three hypercars, Ferrari, McLaren P1, and the Porsche 918 Spyder. Mm. And Matt Damon and Charlie Theron are the show's guests.
They're not the only guests. I think they're only there for... They're in like one episode of season one, aren't they?
Mm. Oh, yeah, they were among the show's guests in season one. But that shows you the budget.
Yeah, it does. I think that I will watch the Grand Tour, but I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it. Right, I'll be honest.
Mm.
One of the reasons for that is because Jeremy Clarkson has basically said, quite clearly, he will be swearing in this, right? And I know he has a filthy, filthy mouth on him, right? He's like...
Yeah.
He's like... You remember Bernard Manning?
Mm.
Right, he's a bit like that. But one of the reasons why I enjoyed Top Gear was listening to Jeremy trying not to swear and the stress that built up with him trying not to swear on TV. Mm. You've got to admit, it was fun. You could sometimes see steam coming out of his ears.
I know you forget this isn't the BBC, don't you?
Yeah. And I think that's... I'm not sure how I'd feel about Jeremy just being able to vent his frustration willy-nilly and going around calling whatever cars and people whatever names he wants. And I'm not sure...
You know he's going to get away with...
Yeah, I know he's going to get away with stuff, but the thing is, I want to see him not be able to swear, because that made the show so much more fun, because he had to get creative with his insults, didn't he? He had to find a way around it.
Oh, you know, yeah.
He couldn't call somebody outright something horrible. He had to find a way around it.
Yeah, it's like there was an episode where it was the UK Top Gear versus the USA Top Gear in a challenge.
Yeah.
And it Clarkson just got so mad.
Yeah, he did.
Like how cocky the US were. It was amazing to watch that episode.
Yeah. Anyway, news is dragging on a bit. So what was the final news story then?
The final news story was, shifting back to BBC, The Apprentice.
Oh?
The Apprentice, well, it does come back in October.
Yeah.
So it comes back next month. The usual panel are there. Okay. Alan Sugar, Claude, and Karen Brady.
Yeah.
But for the sister show, You're Fired, Jack D is not continuing his role.
Really?
As the host of that. In his place is Welsh comedian Rod Gilbert.
Really?
Apparently, he's a big fan of The Apprentice.
Okay.
And he said he has experience being fired from tons of jobs because of his work experience TV show.
Hmm.
He is funny. He's led quite a few shows recently. And as long as he doesn't go over the top with his, he always compares stuff. He has his weird sense of humour. As long as he doesn't go over the top with it.
Yeah. Who's that tall one who used to be a teacher?
Teacher?
Yeah, he used to be a teacher. He does Man Down, you know, that TV series.
Oh, Greg Davies.
See, I think he'd be really good to run that side of the Apprentice.
He probably will be.
You know,
he hasn't hosted anything, has he?
No,
I don't think.
But I think he's got it in him to be to be a fun TV host. I think he could work really well because he's got that strange sense of humour, and he's big and he's goofy. And whenever I've seen him on stuff like Would I Lie to You, he's always been entertaining.
Oh yeah, definitely. Apparently, though, as well, he's the two major successes he's had at the minute, like Man Down and The Inbetweeners. He's played a teacher in both of them.
Wow!
So he's went away from teaching
to playing
to be a teacher on TV.
To playing a teacher. Wow, hell of a career change. Anyway, right, on that note, that was the news, and we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with what we've been watching.
The world of comics and manga are much, much more complex than I'll ever know. So tune in to 4Panel on the Geek Show Podcast Network to make that whole world a little less intimidating.
Welcome back, and now we're going to be going on to what we've been watching. So Andy, for the first time ever, it's just the two of us. So Andy, what have you been watching?
Well, Rob, I've been watching the second consecutive show in a row, a show that has not aired on TV yet.
Oh? How did you watch this mysterious show?
Similar to Daryl O'Brien's Go 8-Bit last week, well, last show, UK TV for Dave released the episode a week before the TV air date.
Really?
And I've been watching Red Dwarf 11.
Okay.
And this series, you watched Red Dwarf 10, didn't you, Rob?
Yes.
And how up-to-date that was.
It was very slick. I didn't like it.
Yeah, the Red Dwarf set was all... give it a red paint job, but it was all modern.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It just felt too... You know when you walk into a hospital and everything is in its place and it has that sanitized medicinal smell to it?
Yeah.
Red Dwarf 10 gave me that feel. I just kept thinking, I shouldn't be watching this. It's too clean. Red Dwarf shouldn't be like this. There's something wrong. Why are they all clean shaven? No, where's the stubble?
Well, Rob, you'll be really good to hear that there's not one shade of red in this first episode.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
the majority of it has a very, very Series 6 feel to it.
Are they back on Starbug?
The first 10 minutes are back in Starbug.
Okay.
In the classic four-seater arrangement.
Yeah.
It looks like a modern old series, if that makes any sense.
What about Crichton? Because there was that controversy about his face, wasn't there?
It moves a lot more.
Yeah.
But it's still there. The comedies are still there.
Yeah.
This episode, it was your classic, what are they called again? The robots, bad guys.
I'm trying to remember.
Forgetting the name.
I've forgotten as well.
I'll just look this up.
You're not on about the robots from one of the early episodes when they filmed their chins with eyeballs on and called themselves the Bindi Bargees.
Yeah,
we hate
those
humans.
Robots.
Yeah, those robots.
Yeah. The same ones from the last episode of Red Dwarf 10, actually. Same.
Yeah.
Well, these ones, they have this, they're after this object that's on Starbug.
Yeah.
And what their aim is to wipe out the technology post-1920s so that they won't have the technology to beat them in the future type of thing.
Hang on, isn't this
it's very
basically
cliched. The joke about it all the way through.
No. It is cliched because it's the same plot as Star Trek First Contact.
And they end up going back to a 1950s USA where technology has been made illegal, and hence Crichton and Rimmer are illegal.
Hang on. All technology has been made illegal?
Yes, apart from the bad robots.
I'm curious about something. When you say all technology has been made illegal...
Post-1920 technology.
All post-1920 technology has been made illegal. Right, yeah. Okay, that clarifies things for me then.
But it leads you to, it's an old-fashioned 1950s America.
But with 1920s technology.
But there's this underground science club where it's where you used to get those illegal drinking bars type
speakeasies
of thing.
yeah
it's like that, but they commit crimes for science. And it's a really great episode, especially to kick it off.
I'm gonna have to watch this.
It airs on the 22nd of September.
All right.
Thursday. But the week behind, you can watch him on demand.
All right. I might have to...
And you have to register, but...
I might have to demand to watch it.
Oh, and we finally get to see Crichton's nipple nuts.
No. Seriously?
Yes.
Does he tweak them and get Jazz FM?
No. The voice activated now.
Are they voice activated now?
Yes.
Can he control his temperature with one of them?
I won't say too much.
So he does get Jazz FM. Oh, I love Red Dwarf, the early stuff. I didn't like season 9 and 10. But
you probably really like this one. It has its old feel to it.
See, the thing is...
Simulants, that's what they're called.
Yeah. I think that Red Dwarf is one of those shows where, yeah, it was a product of its time. But if you update the humour to fit the time now, then it could still work as a show. I think what they did with season 9 and 10 was they tried to update it to look like a modern show. You know, and I think that's where they failed. You don't want to do that. You just want to make it feel like the old show, but with more current humour.
Mm.
You know? So, you could have jokes about, you know, the whole swipe right thing from Tinder.
Yeah.
So, that joke could appear at some point where they just basically, and the swipe right thing happens and they just get catapulted into space or something like that. Or, you know, whatever, however it works, I don't know.
Oh, but yeah, I get
it. That sort of joke, that sort of humor is something that would work with the audience now, but it doesn't have to look like a modern show. And I think that's why I didn't like season 9 and 10.
I did feel like I was watching an episode from Series 6 when I was watching it.
That's a good thing.
It has that vibe.
Yeah, that's a good thing. On to me then.
Yep.
And I have been watching what else but cooking shows, because I likes my food. We already established this earlier on in the episode.
I thought that was the name of the show you were watching there.
No, I like
what
my
else
food.
But
now,
cooking shows.
Now, here's the thing, right? Gordon Ramsay has been on TV loads, and he's got all sorts of shows. He's got Hell's Kitchen, he's got all sorts of other things, right? But one of his shows is called Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, where he goes around. You know, it started in 2007, and I think it ended in 2014, and he goes around fixing restaurants, right? Supposedly fixing restaurants. Yeah?
Yep.
Now, whether they work or not afterwards, I don't know, but he's quite aggressive. He's quite in your face with it, and he's a very shouty person. Yeah, and
a very shouty person.
He is a very shouty person. And the thing is, something always rubbed me a little bit wrong with Kitchen Nightmares. I couldn't really sit down and watch it that often because I don't know. I don't like Gordon's personality when he's in that mode. It's the same reason why I switched off watching Hell's Kitchen, because he lost his temper far too much. And I understand if it's his own kitchen, he wants everything done just so, right? He's the captain of the ship, and that's fine. But when he does this show where he's at home and he's cooking with his wife and his kids, that's actually a much better show, right? Because he's not getting angry. He's not getting frustrated. He can actually communicate better. He's not, spitting bile at people from a distance or whatever it is. And I like that. That's a better type of show. But I'm not actually talking about that show because I haven't been watching Kitchen Nightmares. What I've been watching has been on Food Network, and it's a show like Kitchen Nightmares, right?
Yeah.
And the show is called Restaurant Impossible.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, Restaurant Impossible stars a chef called Robert Irvin, and he goes around doing the same thing as Gordon Ramsay, goes around fixing restaurants in America. But the difference between the two of them is quite striking. See, Robert is British for a start, and he's got that slight bulldog attitude that all British men of a certain age tend to have. But Robert's actually quite he can be quite a domineering person, but he actually sits down and listens to the people as well, which is something that I wanted to see more from Gordon, was him sitting down and being empathetic and sympathetic a lot more. And Robert actually manages to do that, and he communicates well with these people. He explains things, but he doesn't just explain them. He actually helps them by showing them what the community and what people think of them, right? Which has a big effect on these restaurant owners, because it's the outside perception thing, right? But in addition to that, they give him something like $10,000 to renovate their restaurants. And so he gets his designer and his builder in, and they basically, generally, they strip the front part of the restaurant and redecorate it and redo it so it looks nice. And then if there's any stuff in the kitchen, they'll do that. But again, like Kitchen Nightmares, they generally give a couple of dishes that'll pick the restaurant up. These are dishes that are cheap and are easy to make for the chefs in the kitchen of that restaurant, and they're in keeping with the theme of the restaurant as well. So, and he stands there and he cooks them for them and says, try that and try that. And it's something that's so obviously, the entire format of the show, the whole theme of the show is so obviously taken from Kitchen Nightmares, but they seem to run it better. They seem to work it better. And it might be because it's an American production, so it has a certain degree of slickness about it, a certain degree of professionalism.
Would you say it was more of a family feel to it than obviously Gordon Ramsay swearing every 5 minutes?
I'd say it's one that you'd be more comfortable having your kids watch than Gordon Ramsay popping a blood vessel because he can't swear on national TV. But Restaurant Impossible is interesting. And some of the people who Robert is actually helping, they got into the restaurant business for the wrong reasons, but they're trying to make it work. It's just they're in over their heads. And the fact that he's actually helping them, yes, he's getting paid to do it, but even so, this isn't something that he needs to do because his job is actually something else, right? And he's got his own restaurant and everything like that. I like this about Food Network in general, because the chefs from other shows on Food Network can turn up on other shows on Food Network. Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives, for example.
Ah, right.
Robert Irvin has been going around with Guy Fieri for one of the episodes of Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives because the two of them know each other.
Ah, right.
So that's what I'm saying. It's one of the reasons why I think Food Network's not a bad channel at all. It's got interesting content.
I'm going to start watching more Food Network.
Yeah, you'll learn a lot about food. But yeah, Restaurant Impossible is what I've been watching. It's been entertaining. And some of the decor in some of these restaurants is abysmally bad, so I can understand perfectly why they want to change it.
Yeah.
But I'd say, yeah, Restaurant Impossible, it's not a bad watch. It's surprisingly good, and I prefer it to Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh, right. I'll have to give that a watch.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, Food Network doesn't have a complete hold on the good cooking shows because there are some great ones on other channels. And even Food Network has some decidedly odd shows as well.
Well, a lot of channels have odd stuff.
Yeah, wait until you see the odd one that I'm talking about. But yeah, that's what we've been watching. And so before we go, we have something just for our listeners. A little treat, since we talked about the Bake Off so much. We're going to go back to the Bake Off. And shall we take turns?
Yes, we can take turns if you want.
Yep, here are some of the best innuendos from the Great British Bake Off. And you can start, Andy.
Okay, I'll start. Mary Berry, I'm definitely getting an overcooked crust.
A what?
An overcooked crust.
Not saying anything. Sue Perkins telling the contestants that they've run out of time in the Showstopper bread making challenge, yeah? Stop touching your door balls.
Well, a contestant says to Mary Berry, when I squeeze it, it stays down.
I remember that one.
And then Mary just says, we don't need to know that.
Yes. Mel and Sue said this. Stand away from your hot baps.
Yesterday, Paul said my loaf was minutes off being cooked.
Sue again.
That one.
Yeah, Sue again reprimanding somebody for his 3D biscuit showstopper. Stop fiddling with your pirates.
Paul advising on the best way to deal with lemon drizzle. You've got great penetration of the drizzle.
Paul Hollywood explains how to make the perfect 3D biscuit scene. You want something quite rigid, but something that will taste good too.
Sue talking to Nurse Kate in week one.
Yeah.
Put your purple ring where I can see it.
Sue introducing week two's 3D biscuit challenge. Keep your biscuits erect. You've got 4 hours to do so.
Well, here's one similar. You've got 2 hours to achieve ultimate moistness.
That's just wrong. Right. Some Enwazor, one of the contestants, on how he likes to tackle his gingerbread dough. Typically, I do it on the floor because it gets so stiff. I'm just going to leave that there.
Oh, God.
Yep. It's your turn.
Yep. Well, this one's from Mary Berry.
Yeah.
We've had a problem with finishing before, haven't we?
Oh, no, this one's from Mary Berry as well. It's biscuits in week two. Some of them have got a good forking.
Well, this one's off Paul. It's from it would have been the other week. The gingerbread task that they did.
Yeah.
One of them did a task where they did like a gingerbread family type of thing. And Paul is trying this and he says, your sister tastes lovely.
Yeah. Week one, Nancy. And this is a cocker. I almost fell off my chair with this one. I can't remember who said it. I think it was Mel who said it. Wow, to be commended on your nuts by Mary Berry. You've had a great day, Nancy.
Oh, I'm going to have to... I'm running out of these.
Do you want me to go again then? Because this one's one from Sue. The second half of this, right, is in the oven, right? But Sue left a deliberate pause in between the first half and the second half. And I'll read it out as she said it. You've got 2 hours to pop Mary's cherry in the oven. and bring it out again. But we liked, you know.
I like the, that's a really good thing about the Bake Off.
And this is what I mean. Mel and Sue, they're basically like naughty kids. They'll say things like that and get away with it.
It has a good effect when it's them, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like if they did, for example, put Jimmy Carr in there, you know he's going to say something like that, so it won't have the same effect.
Here's a corker, right? Nancy explaining why she prefers traditional mixing methods. Mm. I knew it would be easier by machine, but I just like to feel it. And what was it, 69-year-old Diana? She's basically decorating her her baked products. I'm ganaching my buns.
Oh, no.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Norman's week one Swiss roll. This is a good one. It's just a bit bald and fat and big. That's bragging.
I like that.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Sue Perkins instructing scientist contestant Rob as he put the final touches on his octopus-shaped bread in week 2, season 4. Rob, stop touching up that octopus. Season 4 finalist Kimberly shares her worst nightmare. The terror of a soggy bottom has been keeping me up all night.
Oh, no. Although, that phrase is basically the bake-off now, isn't it?
Yeah. Sue, I remember this one. This was just basically, again, this is one of those ones that just set me off. Sue, in week 7 of season 4, saying to the contestants, think Palmier, think lattice, think pinwheel, but mainly think massive horn.
Oh, no. They must do these, majority of them, on purpose somehow. You can't accidentally say them.
No, this is a great one, right? Sue Perkins, she shocked contestant Glenn ahead of a French pastry challenge in week 7 of season 4. She took a bite of a French shoe confection known as a religieuse due to its resemblance to a miniature pastry nun, and her comment was, I've never eaten a nun before.
That's a good one. Oh.
Go on, Mary, give it a good slapping. I'm not even going to bother explaining some of these.
Yeah.
Time to stop fiddling with Charlotte now. I'm going to try the old wiggling between the two dangling things technique. Oh no, you have some irregular shaped balls. He loves his buns. Mary discussing whisking techniques. It's all in the wrist action. And Sue dishing out some deliberately dirty trifle related advice in season 4. Get those ladies' fingers soggy. But this is why we like the Great British Bake Off. It just has that. It has that innuendo, and it captures it really, really well. And there's so many things that
definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, we're at the end of the show, so we're gonna leave you for another week, and we'll be back next week, hopefully with a full complement. It won't just be me and Andy. But until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andy.
And we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.